The invitation is to put your body in a comfortable position. We prepare at this time to just be in the present moment. We spend so much of our time worrying about the future or focused on the past. Let's just be right here, right now. Allow each breath to fill you. And then to exit your body easily. Breath by breath, you may sense that you have come to the right place, and this is the right time. To everything there is a season. And we have come to that time to be together in wonder and in oneness. See if breath by breath you can allow your focus to go away from whatever may have happened to bring you here today. And just to be connected to this moment. You may think of yourself as breathing in all the love that is embodied in this community. Knowing that that love is a reflection of a greater and sacred reality. At this time, we're feeling that sacred love. We're breathing in that precious gift of life itself in a season where new shoots push up through the earth and buds are engaged in their slow time-lapse explosion. We're feeling that love and that renewal in our hearts, breath by breath. Let us just take some time without any narration to feel connected to the push of spring, the love and the joy of spirit that we all share. Thank you.
to everything turn, there is a season turn, and a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to eat. To everything turn, there is a season turn, and a time for every purpose under heaven. Time to build up, a time to break down, a time to dance, a time to mourn, a time to cast away stones,
a time to gather stones together.
To everything turn, there is a season turn. And a time for every purpose under heaven. A time of war, a time of peace, a time of love, a time to wait. A time you may embrace,
a time to refrain from embracing.
To everything turn. Is a season turn, and a time for every purpose under heaven.
A time to gain, a time to lose, a time to rend, a time to sow, a time to love, a time to wait,
a time of peace, I swear it's not too late. Everything turn.
There is a season turn. To everything turn. There is a season turn. To everything turn. There is a season turn. And a time for every purpose under heaven.
These spiritual window shoppers who idly ask, "How much is that?" "Oh, I'm just looking." They handle 100 items and put them down. Shadows with no capital. What is spent is love, and two eyes wet with weeping. But these walk into a shop and their whole lives pass suddenly. In that moment, in that shop. Where did you go? Nowhere. What did you have to eat? Nothing much. Even if you don't know what you want, buy something to be part of the exchanging flow. Start a huge, foolish project like Noah. It makes absolutely no difference what people think of you. Start a huge, foolish project like Noah. It makes absolutely no difference what people think of you. When I've read this Rumi poem, and when I read this poem, I don't identify so much with Noah, with a huge and foolish project that I am ever so free to pursue because I really don't care what people think about me. No, I identify most, unfortunately, with the spiritual window shoppers. You see, I don't typically do huge, foolish projects, except perhaps getting up in front of congregations and giving a talk, which you might call a foolish project of middling size. Most of my projects, and maybe yours too, are, generally speaking, not huge and foolish, but small and sensible. My recent householder projects, for example, include these: clean the office, sew two buttons on my coat, fix the compost box, chop wood, feed the cat, prepare the taxes. Huge, foolish projects would look somewhat different, I imagine. It's almost hard to picture what they would be, such is the level of my spiritual development. This poem calls to me because it says, because through the poem, Spirit says to me, look, I see you there worrying about what comes next, worrying about how you look, worrying about dropping things out of your pocket. I see you curious about a deeper spiritual path. I see you, Doug, with your 10 to 20 minutes of meditation every morning. I see you when you look at the clock 3 or 4 times before the timer goes off. I see you when you leave church and feel all spiritually warm and fuzzy, only to get so irritated at a tailgating stranger or your lifelong partner that you can barely stay inside your skin without bursting a blood vessel. I've seen you pick up 100 items and put them down, a shadow with no capital. I've seen you with your teeny tiny attention span. By the way, do you know what the average attention span is in our culture? I've heard an expert interviewed who talked about screen addiction to our phones, our iPads, our computers. I'm not mentioning this because it might apply to any of us, you know. Just academic interest, I thought you'd be curious. Studies show that the average human attention span has been reduced by 1/3 in the past 10 years since Apple introduced the iPhone. Yes, the average attention span. Oh, excuse me a second. Yeah, what's up? Wait a minute. Oh, nothing. What are you doing? Oh, sorry, forgot. The average attention span has been reduced by 1/3. It has gone down from 12 seconds to 8 seconds. By way of comparison, the attention span of a goldfish is 9 seconds. And remarkably enough, this has remained unchanged in the smartphone era. Rumi says our whole lives pass suddenly in this shop where we are idly handling one item or another, where we are loitering, where we are killing time, because we are not truly invested. Because when we're just looking, we just lose out. The poet says, don't continue window shopping and walking in circles. Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Start a huge, foolish project. But we don't like looking foolish, do we? We don't like having things sticking out of our coat. You know, I once gave a talk, just an education in the treatment center where I work, and at the end of the education, a fellow came up and said to me, you know, your barn door's been open the whole time.
And I was really glad he waited till the end, although, what are the patients saying about me? I don't like looking foolish necessarily, though in my career as the youngest child in my family, as a sometimes speaker and musician and performer, gosh, I've had lots of opportunities. Rumi's poem says that if we want to avoid being an idle bystander, a wallflower, a shadow, that we need to engage in the flow of life and energy of spirit. The marketplace is a metaphor for the greater world where we do indeed risk looking foolish. If you look at a different translation, you see that where Coleman Barks has, even if you don't know what you want, buy something to be part of the exchanging flow. Another writer put it, become a buyer, that my hand may move to sell to you, and that my pregnant mine may bring forth the ruby. Spirit calls to us, saying to us, I'm waiting for you to come to me. I have riches. If you will but offer yourself up, I will produce this ruby of enlightenment. But you must first become foolish enough to take the risk and show up. Long before Rumi, and long before any of our life stories were being written, another tale was told, and it goes like this. A crowd came to a feast, and when they heard Jesus was coming to Jerusalem, took the branches of the palm trees and went out to meet him, and began to shout, Hosanna! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, even the King of Israel. Jesus, finding a young donkey, sat on it, as it is written, Fear not, daughter of Zion. Behold, your king is coming, seated on a donkey's colt. These things his disciples did not understand at first. But when Jesus was glorified, then they remembered these things. So the crowd waved palms, and they put palm branches and cloaks across the road for Jesus' mount to ride on. Maybe if this event had occurred in Everett, the crowd would have used blackberry vines or hemlock boughs. At our property, I think it would be stinging nettles. There's no doubt about it, those being the most prolific life form of floral variety. But it wasn't just repurposing of the nearest plant life that was going on. The waving of palms is significant because by Roman custom, palms were given to the victors in gladiatorial games, in chariot races, in military conquests. Caesars were honored with palms. Jerusalemites were greeting this somewhat obscure and fringe teacher as a champion, a great leader. Yet in contrast to a warrior or general who would be honored this way, Jesus rode in not on a stallion, not on a great fierce war horse, not in a chariot, but he arrived on the mount of a simple peasant. The lowly donkey was his sacred throne. You know, interestingly, it was a donkey that had carried Mary and Jesus just before he was born as they rode into Bethlehem. Now he rode this humble mount to the place where his earthly journey would end. The life lived between these two equine bookends connects in some meaningful way to the archetype of the fool, of the huge foolish project we've been talking about. For Jesus himself, to some observers at the time at least, must have seemed an utter fool indeed. By the way, in order to avoid saying fool over and over again, I looked in a thesaurus for synonyms, and there were a lot. And just out of curiosity, I looked for synonyms for wise person or genius. So the number of synonyms I found for genius was 8. Fool was 70. I wonder what that says about typical human accomplishment. Like a fool, Jesus made quixotic challenges to the status quo. When he came to Jerusalem riding on that donkey, he went to the temple and drove out all the money changers and those who were selling the sacrificial doves. He overturned the tables and benches. He kind of went Clint Eastwood on them. He was not kind and gentle. He told them why he was doing it. What should be a house of prayer, you have made a den of robbers. He had said this practice of rituals is not important. It's what's in your heart. If you're offering your gift at the altar and you there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift in front of the altar. First, go and be reconciled to them. Then return and offer your gift. Are you kidding me? I can just hear a typical observant worshiper of the time saying, look, I have a business to run. I've brought my offering. I drop it off here. And then I go back to my shop. I go back to my law practice. I go back to my smartphone. I go back to my emails. And I get stuff done. What is this go reconciled nonsense? Who has time for all that? Religious practice had become, as it is for so many, one more transaction, one more thing to check off on your list, one more piece of business. Anyone with some common sense will do what they need to in this sphere and then move on. But Jesus said, no, it's not about business. It's not transactional, it's transcendent. It's not about ritual, it's about relationship. It's the fact that everyone is a part of God. So I can't just complete some contractual practice in a designated holy place and then satisfy my obligations. All places are holy. All beings are God. You can't just mail it in. You have to show up. And then, of course, he told those who were concerned about their own rights and how they're being treated. And aren't we all concerned about that sort of thing? That if you get slapped on one side of your face, offer the other side as well. If you get sued and lose your shirt, give them your coat too. If they ask you to go a mile, go 2 miles with them. Cuckoo! Cuckoo! What was this dude smoking? People must have thought. Sensible people, anyway. What kind of chump acts like this? Oh, and here's another one you get a kick out of. This dimwit also goes around saying things like, don't just love and greet only your own people. Don't just kick it with your homies, like Craig says. Love your enemies. If somebody gives you a completely hard time and you would like nothing more than to return their meanness with dividends, love them instead. Pray for them. I mean, this is such a kooky, goofy, foolish approach. No realpolitik to it. The philosophy of a half-wit dreamer. Jesus was a loser. That's how it must have seemed. What a dope. He could have just snuck out of town. He could have recruited a crowd of toughs to help him slip the noose. But he stuck around. He got captured. And then he got hung up to die. What a waste. A foolish end to a life that was snuffed out too soon. This was the fool who rode into Jerusalem that day. He was some kind of starry-eyed idealist with thoroughly unrealistic expectations of everybody, and he made a quick exit, end of story, nice guys finish last. But the wisdom of this world is foolishness in God's eyes. From that sacred perspective. And Jesus' story lives on and on in our hearts and in the lives of billions. Whereas if he had done the smart thing and skedaddled out of town, we may never have heard of him. Maybe you or I have not taken on any huge foolish projects, or not lately. Maybe we have worried about how we would appear if we tried something that was beyond our scope. But this line, start a huge foolish project like Noah, was also translated this way. Perform an act of service for the Creator's sake. So the real message is that you're invited to hear what is calling you, what is Spirit inviting you to do as a way to serve the Creator and all of creation, which is all of us. No matter what you may feel called to, think about that risk and take it. For it makes absolutely no difference what people think of you. When I come here, or anywhere really, when I even get out of bed and go to the bathroom, it always makes a difference to me on some level what people think of me. Right? I mean, if I see you, if I greet you, if I hug and smile, and you recoil and sneer, or just say, hey, dude, whatever, you know, then I feel wounded. I think anyone probably would. The invitation of the poem, the message is the invitation of Spirit and of Jesus in Jerusalem is that we may always feel that tug toward wanting popularity and acceptance, toward being seen as a winner. We may always be running for homecoming queen. But ultimately, it makes no difference what people think. This is God's truth. It's beyond human truth. If there were a judgment day, I don't believe for a minute there that of in that concept, but let's just play with that for a minute. I don't think you'd find God taking a poll or conducting an election as to who would go to heaven and who would go to hell. Does everybody like you? Okay, you're in. I don't think so. It makes no difference to God what others think of you or me. And it should, if we are living in Christ consciousness, make no difference to you and to me. Spirit invites all of us to loose the bounds of what we think of as sensible or foolish, to listen to the call of what service we may perform, to be like Noah and engage in how we are called to serve regardless of how it appears, because it makes no difference what others think. So we may play the fool, as Christ did, for the sake of all creation. The greater foolishness is when we spend our lives trying to avoid looking foolish. And when we invest our only real capital, our time on earth, in safe and idle choices. For what is spent, what is truly spent, is love and two eyes wet with weeping. Maybe there is a foolishness in loving, in believing in peace, in slowing down and focusing on relationship instead of retirement or what I can gain or building my portfolio. The rewards are hard to quantify. The risks are incalculable. From having my heart busted one more time to wasting a bunch of the irreplaceable clicks of the clock and bits of my treasure. But the greatest teacher I can imagine urged us by his example to walk this foolish path. And one inspiring person after another seems to crop up on my path when my ideals feel frayed. So if foolishness is our way, if we are to be fools in the eyes of the world, let us join in this folly together. My dear brothers and sisters, let us love one another and inspire one another's hearts, one foolish moment after another. Thank you.